Okay, Jalal. Day two. In one of the books, I think it was Distracted, you say that parts of this book may be created by others, but not paraphrased.
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Some parts of this book can be created by others and hence may be produced by them without permissions from the author and the publisher. No part of this book may be paraphrased in any form or by any means. It's in part this issue of receiving things. So when you receive something, you receive it in a certain form already. And so it has a specific wording, manner of appearing, and then if you paraphrase it, that's a problem. But other people can create it, can be put in a situation where they themselves create it, receive it by here within the problematic of distracted, putting themselves against a wall or a corner, trying to open a hole in it and then receiving something. For instance, some parts of this book can be created by others and hence may be produced by them without permissions from the author and the publisher. No part of this book may be paraphrased in any form or by any means.
Did that belong to this book particularly?
You can extend this
to the other books.
I'm not sure I want to go immediately in general terms. Mm. I think my sense is you can extend it, but if we go to specific books, there may be a reason where, let's say, there is a singularity about reception of certain things, and then nobody else can receive this. Yani, مثلاً, if we go to Heidegger says, and this is my view also, nobody can die in my place. Not in the sense nobody can sacrifice himself or herself for me, but nobody can be me in death. So that's a situation where you have a condition where nobody else can be in your place. So unless you're in this situation, or a similar situation. Similar is not a very good word. There's nothing similar to being in death, but like of the sort. Then this, I would say, apply to any book I've written. But one has again to go and see if in the other book there is this limit situation where you alone can be in it. You alone can receive these lines. You alone can write this, and then this no longer applies. Mm. Now, if we go a little back to the situation with Heidegger, nobody can be in my place in death. But in death, again, to go back to Nietzsche, every name in history is I. Nobody can be Jalal in death, but Jalal says, I am Nietzsche, I am Heidegger, I am Blanchot, I am whoever.
And okay, what do you make of this tricky little situation? I mean, what do you do with this?
Just I'm qualifying, nobody can be in my place. Mm-hmm. I agree with it, mm-hmm. but the twisted situation in death is that, yes, nobody can be in my place, but I am all the names of history. Mm-hmm. Or, to put it in a passive way, all the names of history are I. Mm-hmm. So, just like a small note there, and then...
Opening the books. Yes. And at this point, I'm also trying to think how one... You open the books, right? It's clear that every single item in a book for you is of importance. The cover... Because you've also written on book covers. Mm-hmm. And then we may start the books. The books have a particular way of footnoting, except maybe for the second edition of Distracted, where I think the footnotes are in the text itself.
Yes. That is definitely for a specific reason.
Yeah. And then maybe, okay, Do you want to tell us why that particular...
The reason is the unit is the aphorism. And so the footnote has to be within the aphorism. Mm-hmm. Because we still needed footnotes, and usually you don't have footnotes in aphorisms. Mm-hmm. I mean, Cioran, Nietzsche, I've never almost seen a footnote.
In the other books, you've tended to use endnotes rather than footnotes, and they're continuous.
Yes. As opposed to here?
No, I mean, here, I think they're also continuous, if I think they are. 8. Yeah, I think they are continuous here as
well. Yes, again, it's here. Again, it's this double thing of... It's part of a book.
Right.
But at the same time, it's just within the aphorism.
Right. I'm going to go with the short statements. Masalan, in Distracted, are you saying this to me? Also to myself. One should speak solely when also speaking to oneself. Only then is there a dialogue. J.T.
I mean, I'm implicated. If sometime I say, you should do this or don't do this, I am listening to this. I'm not addressing it to someone else only. Mm-hmm. There's something like this at the end, I think, of...
In the interview.
Two or three things I'm dying to tell you. This new book contains two or three additional things I'm dying to tell its readers, as well as the poet Lynn Hejinian and myself. So I am telling this to myself, and I have to try to understand what it is, and I have to think I'm an addressee of this challenge or this warning or this... It's not addressed to only others. Mm-hmm. It also, I think, links to this distinction I make between, for instance, the writer and the person. Mm. And here it's possibly the writer talking to, in part, the person.
I mean, I've seen this come up. I think it's in the interview with Kaylin. Is there an interview here?
Yes, at the end, like 116.
Who do you write for? Yourself, a particular audience. Write page 111. I write for myself as one of the readers of my work. Were it otherwise, my writing, including my responses in this interview, would not be a dialogue. Hence, the quote from Distracted.
Yes.
I also write for and to my amnesiac version in an altered realm of consciousness that he found himself in after a lapse of consciousness, and that I found myself out of after a lapse of consciousness. He needs my help to achieve a modicum of detachment from the stream of thoughts linking in his head on their own, from compulsions, from the insinuating voices over that assail him, and from hallucinations. 2. I write to my untimely collaborators and to the forgetful, grateful reader, i.e. the generous reader. 3. Right?
Mm. Two of them are linked to Distracted.
1.
2.
That's the last one. But the second one is linked to vampires.
Yes.
Right? Because in a way it's also there's something odd about that dedication, because you dedicate the book to yourself.
To the dead Jalal.
To the dead Jalal.
Yes, in the second edition of Oversensitivity, it's to the one who wrote the first edition.
Right. You dedicate, it's so literal, this idea of, are you saying this to me? Yeah. Are you saying this to me? Yes, to myself, right? So that's, in a way, one dedication to yourself.
The dedication is to the forgetful grateful.
Right.
If you're nice, if you're kind to me, you would say... Well, we consider Jalal a forgetful, grateful. Then we can consider that he is among the people to whom the book is dedicated. Mm. If you consider me.
But what is the forgetful, grateful?
Uh, I would say this is like very linked to page 32 of Distracted. It is aristocratic to accept generosity. Generosity is a beginning. It cannot be a response. It cannot be responded to. It is the gratitude of the forgetful.
Vampires, right? In memory of the amnesiac, Jalal Tufik.
Forgetful, we move to amnesia.
Right.
Very different.
Right. Parentheses, not that he no longer exists, comma, but that he was / is undead then / now in the first edition.
It's changed?
No. Yes, it did change. Second edition, in memory of the amnesiac Jalal Tufik, parentheses, not that he no longer exists, comma, but that he was / is dead / undead.
To like clarify it.
Then / now.
Yeah, it's dedicated to him.
Can we talk about that guy?
Page 280. One cannot go back to the other side of the point of no return, even in memory. So you become amnesiac in that sense. He's in that position, to the other side, and it's dedicated in memory of the amnesiac. That's in part why I don't care that much about, or I find biography so limited. There's this other Jalal without whom I couldn't have written this book. And he has seen certain things. And the moment I forget about this other Jalal, I can either stop writing about these things or I can continue writing on these things. But nobody can tell me, not necessarily tell me, make me feel, oh, no, doesn't work here. He's my intuition. He allows me to say, this device, the mirror device, that the vampire doesn't appear in the mirror, or that the vampire tunnels, or that the undead undergoes overturns. He is part of what I intuitively can say, this is rigorous, this I can trust, this I can build a concept on, and this is just okay. More or less smart, more or less interesting imagination of some director somewhere. I mean, I can like it, but it has nothing to do with death. How do I know this? I know it intuitively. But what intuitively means is for me in part the amnesia Jalal, and my untimely collaborators. This is my intuition. I mean, there may be other things, but at least these are two of the things that constitute what for me is intuition. I really believe there is Jalal, amnesiac, in a labyrinthine space and time, undergoing overturns, and I'm listening to what he is undergoing. Now, I can reason, I'm not constantly anxious like he is. I know I am Jalal. I have the leisure of sitting without anxiety, panic, whatever, and saying to myself, if I put this next to this, and if I watch this film, and if I do that, then I can explore more our mortal condition or a labyrinth or something. He doesn't. But we need this collaboration. I have the leisure, I have the ability to control at a modicum level my thoughts so that they don't, like in his case, associate by themselves. And this Jalal, or this, he doesn't necessarily call himself Jalal or assume that name or think he is Jalal, needs my help. I don't have supernatural powers. I can do it through writing. So vampires, in that sense, it's an attempt to assist Jalal the amnesiac. And it's written in collaboration with him. Therefore, in part, it's dedicated.
I mean, there's two figures. There's the Jalal that writes the first edition of Oversensitivity also deserves. You dedicate a book to him too.
Yes.
Okay. It's a different Jalal than the Jalal of Vampire.
Yes, very different.
Okay.
And the one book after the other allow these like variations. The second one is sort of this sense that there is another Jalal. I mean, if you think in terms of let's say, relativity or something, or certain conceptions of time, then I am here talking to you, and there's Jalal who is 30 years old, 31 years old, 29 years old, going through these things, writing this book under enormous pressure, almost going mad. Sorry, this was Vampires. For Oversensitivity, older Jalal, let's say 34, 33, 35, who also is working hard, reading, researching, whatever. And now I take what he did and I revise it. And for me, the minimal thing is to dedicate this thing to him. I don't want the relation to be, I'm a better writer. Okay, in some sense, yes, I can make the concepts more rigorous now. And I didn't listen enough intuitively earlier to, let's say, untimely collaborators in relation to, let's say, radical closure. But he came with the concepts. Radical closure, I didn't right now, Jalal, the one talking to you, or the one who was doing the revised edition, didn't come up with this concept. It's Jalal Tufik of then who came up with the concept. Not just that, the beginning important text on dance, withdrawal of tradition, he came up with. So it's a dedication to him. And he's there. If one day I have a lot of admirers, if one day things are very good for me, he's not ever going to get that.
Okay. The fact that, can we treat this in the sense the same way one might treat it's the fact that it's not repeated in every book.
Yes.
Can we then treat it like we treat the sections on creation and paraphrase in distracted? No. This could apply to every book.
If I do a second edition, it can apply to the book.
Okay. When you do a second edition.
Yes.
But in Vampires, it's in the first edition that you dedicate already to yourself.
But it's not to the living Jalal.
Right.
It's to this other Jalal.
The person who writes Vampires.
Mm.
This seems like such a crucial turn, I think, in the way you end up thinking.
While Distracted is sort of the portrait of, anyway, the living Jalal. So it's in that sense close to me. But Vampires is the... too big for me to go to Deleuze. For me at this point, it has a rigor, whether you treat it as telling you something about our mortality, or it has rigor as a universe we can call Jalal Tufik universe, signed Jalal Tufik. You want to say it's fictional? It's fictional. Okay. But it doesn't fall apart 2 days later. One can treat it like one treats Philip K. Dick books, Bukhanovsky fan. Okay. Both are fine with me. My own sense is this tells me about my mortality. I would have preferred it to be a universe signed Gerald Tufik.
Would you consider the H.P. Lovecraft in Vampires an epigram? The most merciful thing in the world, I think, is the inability of the human mind to correlate all its contents. We live on a placid island of ignorance in the midst of black seas of infinity, and it was not meant that we should voyage far. The sciences, each straining in its own direction, have hitherto harmed us little, but someday the piecing together of dissociated knowledge will open up such terrifying vistas of reality and of our frightful position therein that we shall either go mad from the revelation or flee from the deadly light into the peace and safety of a new dark age.
I mean, I thought it fit very well with vampires. If I didn't have this link with the Amnesia Jalal, then I live on a placid island of ignorance in the midst of black seas of infinity. And this black seas of infinity, for instance, Deleuze in his book on Foucault, towards the end of the book, talks about this. Once you go beyond power and knowledge, you enter another area, and there you have to deal with infinities. And if I remember, he says the big task is to fold the infinities into something livable. And so, yes, I mean, from him to here, this is a more darker view. But there the threat is present in Deleuze's writing on Foucault, writing on these areas beyond knowledge and power. And this I find very, I find an affinity with, that it's true for me that this issue of dissociated knowledge, and that this is merciful. I think you can write something in terms of Sufism on this. That's part of God's mercy, that these things are dissociated in your mind.
Tayyib, forthcoming.
Yes.
In memory of the Nizari, Hassan ala dhikri salam.
Yes. It's been such a long time. In memory of the Nizari Hassan ala zikrihi salam, on his mention be peace, the Qarmati Abu Tahir Sulaiman al-Jannabi, and the 12er Shiite Abu al-Hassan Ali bin Muhammad al-Samarri. Three Shiite figures towards whom I feel very, very strong affinity.
Okay. Could you, I brought my little... I had to dig deep in my Ismaili and other websites to figure out who some of these figures are.
Okay. Digging deep into Ismaili. Okay.
Well, just some of them. I mean, so who is Nizari Hassan ala zikrihi salam?
The Nizari Hassan ala zikrihi salam is the Ismaili imam who initiated the Great Resurrection in Alamut, in northern Iran. He was considered the Qa'im who would abolish, Qa'im, Qiyama, yes, abolish Sharia, Orthodox religious law, and he started the time of redemption for that sect. The Qarmati Abu Tahir Sulaiman al-Jannabi is of sort of the same sect, who did something very problematic. He led his followers to Mecca They slaughtered pilgrims and they took the black stone from the Kaaba back to their area of rule. And the last one is the fourth deputy of the hidden imam. It's reported he receives a letter from the imam saying the lesser occultation is over, now the greater occultation has started. The greater occultation started with his receiving the letter, and it's still going on until now. So Shiites, 12 Shiites in Lebanon, Iraq, Iran, are still waiting for the hidden imam whose occultation in this manner started with that letter. If you read the letter in the Orthodox 12er Shiite way, you would say he's just a deputy. We have much greater figures. We respect him, but that's it. But you could read it differently. If you don't necessarily believe in the Orthodox manner, you could almost say he did this gesture. I mean,
he announced the greater occultation, you mean?
He was the intermediary between people and the supposedly absent imam. Nobody had seen the imam. It's not like he disappeared at one point. Shiites say there was a 12th imam. He was hidden from the Abbasid who would have killed him. And then he had four deputies. And he's the fourth one. And he says, the imam sent me this letter. And whereas before, he was hidden but part of the world. And so you could, through me, get letters to him, get his instructions or teachings. From now on, he's no longer part of the world. Nobody can contact him in this manner. I mean, some people say they have visionary dreams where, okay, there are other manners, but this is no longer possible. And he's interesting for me because I can read his gesture as he did it. Irrespective of what you believe about the imam. Did the imam tell him this? I don't know. But the repercussions of that letter have colored Shiism. Until now.
And the Qarmati, مثلاً, I mean, this is a figure who sacks Mecca, right?
Yes, it's developed in forthcoming why I feel that gesture is
appropriate, albeit problematic, or something
yes,
like this.
Yes, appropriate, albeit problematic. It can be read as a symptom of the withdrawal of tradition. You think Mecca is still a special place, notwithstanding the surpassing disaster? No. What you're doing is counterfeit. Mecca is no longer a special place. And so we're going to take this black stone and put it somewhere else. However problematic this action is, there is a justification for it. It's a positive gesture. Because sometimes you cannot indicate or imply the withdrawal. Otherwise, you have to do something very problematic.
When I was reading the withdrawal book yesterday, I was kind of glad that not enough people are reading it in Beirut. Because I thought if they did, one of the possible misunderstandings would be to like hunt you down. Like in the sense, if they misread, look, this guy is celebrating the Qarmatis and their sacking of Mecca, and it would be hot, like given the context of simplification of what is being said, it could go in a crazy direction.
Yes, this could go. Ashura could go.
Yeah.
Yes.
So,
thank you.
I'm glad you're still around. I mean, it frightened me.